We don't like punishing people, of course. It's not something that we want to do. But if someone needs to be punished, they need to be punished. And I think that's what the 10 plagues is about.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. That's a very, very good first point from the 10 plagues, that it's, I don't think it's about a celebration.
You are listening to the JP Show,
where we discuss the issues you care about from a Jewish perspective.
I am Rabbi G.
And I am Rabbi Levy.
And we hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to another episode of the JP Show. So today, myself and Rabbi Levy are here again, and I think we're a little bit tired because we went to a very nice wedding last night.
Yeah.
So I hope it makes sense, but we'll give it a try. So Pesach's around the corner. Seder is one week from tonight, which we're recording this on Monday night, or Monday afternoon, I mean. So do you like the Seder? Is that the Joel part of the...
Well, the Seder is unbelievable. We spoke about this a little bit last week. It's a very powerful experience. I think one of my best memories as a child, actually, of this Dorim. You know, the idea that you're able to stay up late is always exciting. I actually used to be excited for the matzah. I mean, I still am, but for a different reason, I think. I think nowadays I'm more excited for like more the spirituality of it. But you know, I think when I was a kid, I actually used to enjoy it, funnily enough.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, everyone complains about the taste of matzah. I like crispy things in general. So
right,
I actually like matzah.
You like your challah burnt also. So
yeah, so I'm okay with matzah. I mean, matzah is not so okay with me because it's not so good for me. But I look forward to the matzah. And I think the same like you. I from a very young age, the Seder was one of my highlights of the year, actually. It was just beautiful.
What's your favorite part?
You know, it's interesting. I some of the songs are very, very beautiful. Saying the Haggadah. Actually, what's very special to me, because it was when I was a child, and I try to sort of continue this, it was always said in a very special tune, is actually after the meal, when everyone's really tired, when we say the Hallel,
yeah,
it's considered actually in the Seder itself. It's actually considered a very holy time, and I remember my father, blessed memory, would say it in a very special tune, and we try to continue that tune. And it was a very special moment actually. It wasn't anything said or explained. It was actually just chanting in a way, but it was just a very beautiful, beautiful moment. Like it was. It's late at night, you're already finished, you've said everything, you've talked, you've discussed.
You're after three cups of wine.
Right, exactly, after three cups of wine. And it's like kind of, you're just doing it because you're capturing the moment, like, you know?
No, for sure. Hallel in general, for me, is a highlight.
Prayer,
any festival, we say Hallel. There's a lot in there. There's like thanking God, there's beseeching God. There's a lot of a range of emotions in Hallel.
Very trust, beautiful. Faith.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and especially now, you know, especially now, we think we need a lot of faith. Also, one of the themes of Pesach is, and the Seder night is gratitude, and we thank God for all the miracles that He's done throughout the year.
Yeah.
And I think we mentioned this last week, that famous paragraph of Hisha Amda, that every generation they try to get us, but God saves us. And I think yesterday was an amazing display of that.
I think it was amazing. The fact that Iran shot so many things to Israel and 99% of them were intercepted, I think is actually a modern day miracle. I mean, it was we call enclosed within nature, but we know that ultimately everything happens from Hashem, and the chances of intercepting 99% of them, I think I think it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I what I thought about was last night, you had like within a very, very short time, you had a very serious threat, very serious.
Yeah.
And then just it all came to an end, which was amazing. And I just think, you know, with that and many other things, the Seder this year is so important and so such a powerful reminder of what it is to be Jewish and connected to God and the miracle of Jewish survival.
Yeah.
So one of the things we talk about at the Seder is the 10 plagues. Was that a favorite for you as a child?
Well, there's a lot of action there. Like, you know, you pour out wine and then it's, you know, the wine spills, and and I think the story is also, especially for kids, it's just an extremely exciting story. blood and frogs and hail mixed with fire, and it's like a lot of.
I think when you guys were kids, one of the stuff. One of the highlights was the templates, because you all got very excited about the things you'd learned at school.
Yeah.
Including like the funny things, like that the frogs went into the ovens and in the beds, you know, that right. The frogs were all over, and I think little kids find that very fascinating. So what do you think the significance of mentioning the 10 plagues is?
I think there's a lot of things. I mean, something that literally just came to mind this split second, I think, which is also relevant to this year, I think we have to know that evil needs to be punished. You know, this idea that we're just nice to everyone and everything is wonderful and we're always loving. I don't think we're always anything. I think it's we always have to do the right thing. For the most part, the right thing to do is to love our fellow human beings and to be nice and to be decent. But if you're dealing with an evil society, which Egypt was at the time, in fact, one of you know, effectively, Egypt was to Jews like a concentration camp. I mean, the things that happened there, they killed Jewish babies and horrible, horrible stuff. And they deserved to be punished, and they got what they deserved. And I think we're not ashamed of that in the Seder. I was reading this very bizarre article this year when it came to Purim, and I'm only mentioning it just to show you how bizarre it is. How someone was saying when they read the Megillah and they come to the part when the Jewish people, you know, kill their enemies, they get a little bit uncomfortable. Like, what is this all about? Like, why are we taking revenge? I don't think we need to be uncomfortable with these things. I think we need to understand that we don't like punishing people. Of course, it's not something that we want to do, but if someone needs to be punished, they need to be punished. And I think that's what the 10 plagues is about.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point. That's a very, very good first point from the 10 plagues, that it's, I don't think it's about a celebration, because actually at the same time we're told not to celebrate the downfalls of our enemies.
That's one of the reasons why actually we always spill wine, actually. It's like to show that we're not happy, so to speak, that they got punished.
But I think more than a celebration, it's a moral obligation, which we have to be very clear about and be comfortable with.
Yeah.
Same thing like in modern times. No one wants to have a war and no one wants to kill.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's a moral obligation. When you have an evil terrorist regime, they need to be eliminated. It's very simple. So do we want that? Is that part of the, you know? But morality is not things that we enjoy necessarily. Morality is correct. To do what's right.
Right.
Sometimes it comes together with things that we enjoy. So, but that's fine. But morality is things that sometimes we have to fight. And sometimes with guidance and with when the value is appropriate, and Torah, of course, provides the guidelines, war is moral.
Yeah.
And when it's moral, it's a thing to do confidently, to do with confidence. Doesn't mean you have to be so happy that you went to kill. No, on the contrary, we don't want to kill. Because one of the, you know, you have in moral values in Judaism that conflict with each other sometimes. I mean, there's nothing more than we value than life.
Yeah.
At the same time, we need to know sometimes it's a moral thing to, for the sake of life, actually, for the sake of survival and protection and so on, the moral thing is to call out evil and to sometimes eliminate it. And that's the message of the 10 plagues. The 10 plagues really dismantle the infrastructure of Egypt.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really good point.
Beginning with the ideology, actually. In fact, the first plague of blood was because the Egyptians worshipped the Nile, because it didn't rain and the Nile would overflow into the fields. And so I think part of dismantling a society is not only getting rid of the evil people, it's also being very confident about dismantling their false ideologies, which leads to the evil.
Which in Egypt was a pagan culture and very, and that's why the arrogance of being against God and not letting the Jewish people go and so on was all part of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's right. So the first plague was to smite the Nile River, which was their deity, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's one play. That's one lesson. Any other lessons from the 10 plagues?
I think there is another thing I was thinking about also. Like, and this is more of a, I think, an educational question, but not only educational to children, educational for ourselves. Like, these things to us sound very bizarre. Like, suddenly frogs are appearing, water's turning to blood, even the splitting of the sea sounds like. And I think it's like this attempt that some people try to do. They try to make it, and. Yeah, they try to make it a little more scientific, come up with some sort of like explanation. How did the splitting of the sea happen? Maybe it was like a tsunami or something, or I don't know exactly, some sort of natural explanation. And maybe they do that because they're worried that if we teach our children these very wild ideas, maybe when they grow a little older, they'll start thinking like, really? Is this really true? Like, and then they'll start doubting everything. Like, what do you think about that?
Yeah, now it's a really important point. It's probably one of the reasons we mentioned the 10 plagues and the Red Sea splitting and so on. And it goes back to the fundamental idea, that is that God does perform miracles. Now, we should note that God doesn't just perform miracles for no reason, meaning
right.
there is a concept that God created the world, but this is the whole idea, you see, that he created the world with a system which we call in Hebrew teva, which is nature. So the scientific cycle and routine of how the world functions. That is God's system, right? And he wished that he wanted that the world should run according to that system. So he doesn't break that system very often, but because he doesn't want to, because he could, but he doesn't want to because he wants the world to run according to that system of nature which he himself created, he designed. But there are some times when things are necessary, when salvation is necessary, God does perform miracles, right? Because he transcends nature. In other words, what miracles teaches us, and what remembering miracles teaches us, is that everything's from God. In other words, the reason that miracles are possible is because nature is also godly.
Mm.
Nachmanides said that actually there's no difference between nature and miracles. The only difference is that the one happens not so often and the other one happens every day.
Right.
So for example, why is the sun setting or rising in the east every day less miraculous than the sea splitting?
Yeah.
Right? It's not. It's an amazing thing. I mean, the way the universe runs is truly amazing. It's just we take it so much for granted, so therefore we think, we expect it to happen, so we think it's a system that happens on its own. But it's all godly. And God, you know, there's a story in the Talmud about a great sage who came home and he was very poverty stricken. And his daughter came out to greet him and she was crying, I think, and she says, there's no oil in the house to light the Shabbat candles. So he said, what is in the house? And she says, only a little bit of vinegar, which of course is not flammable. So he said, well, what's the big deal? Whoever told the oil to burn can tell the vinegar to burn. And the story goes that she put wicks in the vinegar and it lit, right? Now, not everyone is in the position to be able to do that, but he was a very, very godly person. But the point is, the philosophy behind that is the same thing, that every day we get up and we have so many miraculous things that happen, like the sun rising, like the plants growing, the trees blossoming, you know, and so on and so forth. These are all miraculous events, just they happen every day, that's all. They're godly events. And they happen according to a system, but that, again, that system is a godly design system, right? So therefore, when the sea splits or the plagues happen or frogs come out of the river into the ovens and so on, it's a miracle. It's a reminder that God is not bound by nature. He set the natural system into movement, but he's not bound by it. If he wants to, he can create a miracle. Now, it is true that nowadays less miracles happen, less revealed miracles happen, right? Because God is more hidden, it says, in the time of exile, and he's more hidden particularly towards the end of the road. In other words, now we like live in a time of darkness. But we know a lot of modern-day miracles. Each person has miracles in their own life. And number one, look at the Six-Day War, for example, which was clearly miraculous.
Yeah.
And look at even yesterday, which was a miraculous thing, really. And just generally, the way Israel has survived, Israel has blossomed, it's truly miraculous. So, yes, we might be a little cynical when we read about frogs coming. You know, we think it's these stories that are told to kids when they're in preschool, but it's actually not. These are midrashim. These are parts of the Talmud, and these things we have to believe for sure can happen. Attempting to rationalize everything is in itself a problem because we are not a rational people.
Yeah.
Meaning our existence is not rational.
On any level.
Now, we are a rational people in the sense that we're the people of the book. So we're charged with studying. Studying is a huge emphasis and trying to understand the complexities of the philosophical ideas of the Talmud, the halachic ideas of the Talmud, and so on. But we're not essentially a rational people in terms of our existence. So therefore, I think even Ben-Gurion once said that.
Yeah.
And he wasn't the biggest rabbi, if you know what I'm saying.
Correct.
God once said that to be in Israel, to be a realist means you have to believe in miracles.
Right, for sure.
Right, because that's the thing. Now, we also have to also recognize, there's another, you mentioned before, Hallel. The one we say on Pesach is a longer Hallel. And over there, it talks about this concept that God does many, many wonders. And sometimes those wonders are things that we don't even know about. Only he knows about, right? We have daily miracles. You never know. Like sometimes we cross a road just in time. We cross a road, we just thought it was a routine crossing, but actually, it might have been just a few minutes early that day because there was something going to happen on that road. You know, there's so many things that God does for us that are truly miraculous. We're not always aware, that's all. But yeah, recounting the 10 plagues, splitting of the Red Sea, the going out of Egypt in general is a really strong reminder that miracles can happen and miracles do happen. And
that we are a miracle.
And we are a miracle, exactly. We are a miracle.
Yeah, I think that's what we're celebrating by the Seder in a very big way. Yeah. Yeah, talking about the uniqueness of this year, do you think like we should be doing anything different? We should put put something extra on the table or something like that. Maybe you can shed some guidance about that.
Yes, I think we should be doing something special, but not in that way. You know, I think one of the things that we do, obviously, when we think about all the soldiers who I just saw today, there's, you know, a lot of, actually, last week the soldiers were discharged a lot, but actually a lot of them have been called back already, and you know, Israel's still on high alert, and many of them are going to be in the tanks or on the front lines for Pesach. They want to be with their families for the Seder.
Yeah.
So should we be doing something special? Of course. However, it depends what that means. One of the things that's not a healthy thing and not a correct thing, spiritually speaking and even halachically speaking, is to make up our own things, like, you know,
right,
to, I don't know, have an extra fruit on the table or something, right? That's just a signal. It's just...
It's not achieving anything,
just, right? What we should be doing, we have to remember that the Seder is a really spiritual experience, so we need to make it more spiritual. There's that famous story, and maybe I'll just share this, which you reminded me of last week, and that is, in the 70s, there was a tremendous effort to raise awareness and consciousness about the plight of the Jews in Russia under communist rule, right?
Mm.
And the Federation in America came up with this idea that every person should have an extra chair, an empty chair, they say the representing Russian Jewry. They wanted to get the great leaders of the Jewish people to agree and to sign on to this idea and to promote it in their and use their influence. So the Federation has sent a delegation to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and they put this
his birthday is this week, on Friday,
the 11th of the month of Nisan, and they put forward this idea and they were waiting for his response. So the Rebbe started off by saying to them, he said, you know, I think adding a chair to the Seder table is a very, very good idea, with one condition, that it's not left empty, right, that you fill it up. In other words, you want to do something extra? Go find another Jew that doesn't have a Seder. Go find someone.
He used to talk about, you know, we have the four sons by the Seder. He used to talk about the fifth son, who's actually not by the Seder. And he's talk about how our mission is to find that fifth son and bring him to the Seder. Perhaps this year will be a good year to find all the fifth sons, all the fifth children.
Yeah, no, because the point was, I think, that we have the four sons. One of them is a wicked son, right?
Right.
But the greatness of the wicked son is he might be challenging, but he's there.
Yeah,
he's engaging, he's connected, right?
Yeah.
So he's, like, the worst thing is the fifth son, doesn't even make it at the Seder. So yes, I agree. So I think this is a good time to think about our Seder. How can we make it more spiritual? Maybe spend an extra 5 minutes on the Haggadah, searching some insights, making sure everyone has shmura matzah, to eat a big piece each night, to do the mitzvah, find someone else to fill up that chair, meaning to provide a Seder for someone who maybe doesn't have one or doesn't have a meaningful one. So yes, we should definitely be doing something extra. Our Seder this year needs to be different. There's no question about it. We can say a prayer at the Seder for prayer is always a good thing.
Yeah.
For our brothers and sisters, especially when we open the door for Eliyahu Navi. It says it's a very auspicious time to request things from God. But we shouldn't just make up new things so that we can feel good that we've done something. We actually have to put in the effort to enhance the Seder itself, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Wishing everyone a good Yom Tov.
Yeah, I think we're also going to take a break now for like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
We will be back right after Pesach. But in the meantime, again, like you said, wishing everyone Chag Kasher V'Sameach, a wonderful Yom Tov, and maybe we see the miracles of redemption in our times.
Amen.
With the victory in Israel and the complete salvation.
Amen.
Chag Sameach.